Blog Talk Radio.
You have just tuned in to an episode of Paranormal Horizons with your hosts, Jason Ophir, Sherry Pang, and Maria Wilson Duff. Stay tuned as we enter into the world of the paranormal, a world of ghosts, UFOs, and generally anything unexplained. The show is about to begin.
Welcome to Paranormal Horizons. I'm Sherry Pang, a.k.a. Psychic Medium Sherry, and I'm joined by my wonderful co-host and friend, Maria Wilson Duff. So I'm going to bring her on.
Hello.
Hi, Maria.
How are you?
How are you?
I'm doing really well. It's been a very interesting week to have a new cast that hit the ground, and I'm pretty excited. It doesn't take much to make me happy.
Okay, what's the new cast?
I don't know if it's a bull or a heifer. It's still too young for me to tell, and Mama Cow doesn't let me near it.
Oh, my goodness. So you have a new baby. Oh, cow.
Yes.
I thought you said cow. Oh, my goodness.
Oh.
I thought you passed, T-A-S-K. Sorry.
You're so funny.
It's calf. My, I need my ears cleaned. What a
You're
weird
silly.
Show. Oh, my gosh. That's wonderful. Wow. Their babies are so cute.
I enjoy Aww. Dealing with my calves.
No, she's continuing. How long does she milk her milk the baby until they actually get solids?
I let them stay on the mama's 8 months, and that way they keep getting the nutrients that they need, and then I'll sell the calves off, and then we start to cycle all over again.
And what about the other ones? Are they watchful? I don't know much about calves, but do they protect the baby, or do they kind of, you know, do their own thing and just leave mom and baby alone? And how do they, you know, how they deal with the new baby?
They all stay together pretty much. I mean, they, it's just like you having a new child into your normal family. It's accepted and brought on, you know, and brought into the family.
All right. Excellent. Well, we have a wonderful returning guest, and it's amazing. I don't know where to begin, but from the bottom of my heart, I know this guy is so, so busy, and I just really appreciate him being able to spend the time to be our guest again. I've been on radio for 4.5 years. It's flown by really fast. And I think if I can remember, Brian's been pretty close to within a year, 6 months to maybe a year since I started on radio. He's been a regular guest. It's very honored to have Brian Ouellette. And Brian, please go and correct me if I'm not pronouncing your last name correctly. And Brian is very well known for, he's well known not only on the Ghost Adventures series, but also in his own work as an exorcist. He takes on cases. It takes a long time for him to accept you as a client, but I feel that, you know, once he feels too that you are serious and it's something that is deemed necessary for him to perform his work, it's amazing what he does. So we're going to have Brian on tonight, and he's right on air, and I'm going to just introduce him. Hey, Brian, welcome to Paranormal Horizons.
How you doing tonight? It's great to be here.
Pretty good. I'm really good. I got my workout in, and I'm ready to go.
Awesome. That's fantastic.
And I hear, and if I could remember, we go way back. Are you still running?
I do, yeah. I fell off of it during the Advent season just because I was too busy. But I'm back into it now, so all is good.
Good for you. Yeah, running is great. I mean, it's really good for the cardio, and, you know, it has its benefits. And people say, oh, my gosh, running is not good for you and yada, yada, yada. But, you know, as a running coach and a race director, when I was running 23 years competitively before I went into bodybuilding, I told people this is the truth. I feel it's not running itself, it's how you run and how hard you run. So running is really good for you. You just got to be very mindful and not go the distance and more than your body can handle. You can run until you're 90 as long as you're very mindful of how far and how hard and how you run and you have good running shoes. So that's just my peace of mind.
No, that's absolutely true. I've never really had any problems with it. And honestly, it's no secret the way I like to eat. And the only way to maintain, you know, some healthy weight is by doing the running because I'm not going to sacrifice on the diet.
True.
Food tastes too good.
That's absolutely right. I enjoy it way too much. And to give it up, no, I'll just add exercise. That's fine.
That's how you go and maneuver the calories and you know, you keep the muscle tone and everything else, and that's how they are when you do, you know, bodybuilding, whether, you know, you're training for bikini like I am, or you're going into, you know, figure or physique or bodybuilding, you know, you try and you learn to manipulate the calories by exercising more.
That's
hey,
right.
Brian,
yeah,
do
that's
you want to introduce yourself really quick and to those that have never heard about you? Go ahead and introduce yourself, and then we'll just get in and play, go with the flow.
Well, certainly. My name, obviously, we've already mentioned, is Bishop Brian Ouellette, and I am the presiding bishop of the Holy Nicolaitan Catholic Church, which is an independent Catholic church, not in union with the Vatican. It's something that some people have a, you know, struggle with understanding. Because they hear the word Catholic and they think there's only one Catholic church. There's numerous kinds of Catholic churches, and Rome is just the primary one that everyone's familiar with. Originally, all of these churches were in union, but, you know, different traditions developed and different things happened historically that there were, you know, breaks here and there. And we call them schisms in the church, and they're never a good thing, but they are what they are. And so the Nicolaitan Church is one of those many independent Catholic churches, and I am the presiding bishop of that that particular tradition of independent Catholicism. In addition to that, I am also the chief exorcist for the Atlanta division of the Order of Exorcists, and that is our primary outreach for the Holy Nicolaitan Catholic Church. So most of my job is, you know, not doing the normal pastoral things. Most of what I do is investigating alleged claims of demonic possession, or at least demonic events. Any time a family feels that they might be under the influence of a demonic entity, or if they feel that there might be something malevolent within their home, then we investigate those cases. And as we do that, you know, we root out whether or not it's an authentic case. There's always four possibilities in every case, and that is: one, that they're faking it. And now that I'm, you know, very visible on radio shows like this or television, we do get people that do fake demonic events so that we hopefully would come out and maybe they might get their 15 minutes of fame on television. So that's a new added feature, or I guess you could say it's an added side effect of being visible and accessible. But you know, we know how to look for that, and it's not too much of a problem at this point. But it is an extra step. But that's one possibility. Sometimes people are faking. The other possibility is that, you know, they really sincerely believe that something paranormal is going on, but it's actually just mental illness or some kind of emotional problem. Sometimes even a medical problem, neurological problem, can create the illusion that there's something paranormal going on in their lives. And so that's another possibility that we have to rule out. And then the other two is a genuine paranormal event that is not demonic, or a general, a genuine demonic event that is demonic. So every case will always result in one of those four possibilities, and it's our job, it's my job, to figure out which one it is. And then if we do find that it is genuine, if it's either one of the genuine cases, whether it be demonic or not, we create a treatment plan to help that family get the matter resolved. And so that's primarily what the Holy Nicolaitan Catholic Church does now. It does have also a small teaching ministry, and that's how it started. It really was established as a church that would teach esoteric Christianity, but as time went on, more people needed us for the exorcism ministry, so we've sort of shifted our focus a bit. So we're about 85-90% involved in demonic investigation, and then the other, 15-10% is essentially the teaching ministry.
So let me ask you, Brian, what would you say, and you and I both know, we know that the other side exists, the dark side. What would you say to somebody who says, well, I don't believe in ghosts and I don't believe in the dark side, it's just in your mind, and whatever you can conjure up, that's going to happen, and it doesn't even exist because it's all in your mind. How do you deal with people that are skeptical about, the dark side, and if it does truly exist in this world?
Well, I mean, it gets down to it's a philosophical dilemma, because what is reality exactly, and how do we define it, and how do we establish it, and how do we decide that anything is reality? Everything, of course, is being filtered through your mind. And so, just because something is a part of your non-corporeal self, which is the mind, and let's not forget that the word psyche, which we derive the word psychology from, essentially means spirit or soul, actually. And so, we have this understanding today that those are separate things. They're not separate things. The ancients never understood them to be separate things. Mind and spirit are the same exact thing. And so, these are problems of modernity. They're not really issues that the ancients would have even thought of as being something for consideration. So when we think about something that's actually reality, we can't discount reality just because something is a product of our mind, because everything's a product of our mind. Right now, your mind is processing this conversation. But it's real. So a lot of times what people think is established reality is when numerous observers can look at the same thing and agree that this is what it is. So, if we look at a table, for example, and I look at a table, you look at a table, and we agree that that's a table, then we say that the table's real because everyone's in agreement. What the problem is with skeptics is that the experience with the paranormal tends to be sometimes very personal. Religious experience can be sometimes very personal. And so in those cases, it's only one observer having it. And it's not an observation that numerous people can come in and look at and say, oh, that's what it is. So that creates an added dimension to this discussion where then we look at it and say, well, then it mustn't be real if only one person is experiencing it. But we know that can't be true because, everybody's life has numerous elements that are absolutely authentic elements that only you have experienced. And so that doesn't make it less real either. So when we start talking about things like what is real, we have to really decide how to define that. And so typically what we are looking for are disturbances that can be observed and repeated. Basically the scientific method, for lack of a better way of putting it. And then at that point, it can be established that something unusual happened here, something that would, I guess you could say, would be associated with a paranormal experience. So when skeptics come to me and say that ghosts aren't real, you know, it comes down to the fact that, okay, well, just because you have not had this experience doesn't invalidate the countless people throughout history that have. And actually, I was having this conversation today with my wife about ghosts and how the East and the West look at this. And, in Eastern philosophy, you look at some of the Eastern religions, Buddhism has an entire system built around the idea of hungry ghosts. In Japanese culture, you have the yokai. You have various other spiritual entities that are basically established fact for the culture. Sometimes it's looked at in a more of a mythological sense. But overall, you know, you look at any culture throughout the world, ghosts have been a part of it. And that comes from somewhere. That comes from a shared experience. Now, it might be happening individually, but that doesn't mean that it's any less real. And that's very, it's almost pure fact. There's no other way to look at it when you can say that if it was just a few people having this kind of experience, it would have faded out by now. You know, you would have, particularly now in the postmodern world, we would have gotten past and say, okay, well, it was just everyone's imagination. But we're still talking about it. Paranormal television is a big genre now. I mean, Travel Channel has pretty much changed its entire purpose. You know, it used to be actual travel shows. I remember when you could turn it on and they had, like, Shark Week, you had Vegas Week, you had, you know, Beach Week, you had all this crazy stuff. They would show, you know, the top 10 roller coasters in the world. They don't do that anymore. Now it's all paranormal shows, you know, and that's how big it is. And
oh my God.
You can't mean to, I mean, when you look at that, though, that's a shared experience. Now, it might not be happening to everybody the same way as it would in a more of a scientific validation, but it is a shared experience that still is happening. People are reporting these things. And any of us who actually work in this field already know that this stuff is real. There's different ideas as to how it manifests, what it is. You know, there's Christians that claim that there are no ghosts. It's always just demons. So they see demons everywhere. And that's a big sticking point with a lot of people in the paranormal community right now. A lot of people automatically assume when they see me and they, you know, my title's an exorcist, they immediately assume, oh, he's an exorcist. He's on television. He's on these paranormal shows. He must be one of those guys that thinks everything's a demon. And nothing could be further from the truth. In fact, very rarely do I ever encounter demons. Most of the time, when it is a genuine case, okay, most cases are not genuine. But out of those that are, it's usually not demonic. It's usually something else, and the family's misinterpreting the experiences as being malevolent, and when in reality what it is just frustration from the spirits involved. So, you know, I don't know if that would actually be an answer that those kinds of individuals would accept, but, you know, it's a really philosophical question, and it's very short-sighted to say just because you haven't had a paranormal experience that it can't possibly exist, and, you know, you're the only level-headed person in the world, so everyone must bow down to your great wisdom. Yeah, the people that talk like this tend to take a more arrogant stance. There's always this idea that it's the people that believe in ghosts, that they're the unstable ones. They're the ones that are not, you know, with the program. They're superstitious. They need to grow up. They need to, you know, whatever. And so it really is just another type of ignorance. You know, if you really are skeptical, the best thing that you can possibly do is do more research. Try to get into the mind of a person who has had these experiences, and maybe one day you will have one, and then you'll know why the rest of us are involved in this field. So, you know, I'm well beyond, you know, I know I'm on Ghost Adventures and everything. I know a lot of that, the focus of that show is to, you know, collect evidence and to, you know, present it on TV so that people can decide for themselves whether or not, you know, this is an actual proof of an afterlife or whatever. But, you know, for me, in my work, I'm well beyond all of that. My investigations don't involve trying to validate whether or not there's an actual ghost. Once I know that we're dealing with something that is genuine paranormal, my goal then at that point is to just identify what kind of disturbance this is and then resolve it. So my investigations are actually quite short. It doesn't take very long to prove whether or not there's an authentic thing going on. It doesn't really take a whole lot of time to figure out what kind of thing it is, what kind of disturbance it is. What is the long time is actually creating a resolution plan that works for the client and hoping that you have a compliant client to work with. That's the biggest struggle. But, you know, as far as the skeptics, they're going to believe what they want to believe. And they're, you know, they're just as narrow-minded as some of these Christians who think that everything's a demon, that, you know, that there are no ghosts. It's another type of ignorant narrow-mindedness. You have to step outside your paradigm to grow. You have to step outside your paradigm to learn. And things are not black and white, you know, and reality is not what we think it is.
Well, people get upset whenever their schedules are interrupted. So if something paranormal started happening to a normal family, that's not something that they are equipped to deal with because, number one, they've never believed in the paranormal in the first place. So whenever they have to step outside of their comfort zone or out of that box, that's when they start to really lose grip in reality, and they have to step back and reevaluate what's going on. And there's a lot of people that don't, they can't wrap their minds around that, and it disturbs them for the rest of their lives.
That's exactly true. And I think that that's a lot of the problem that we have with people that struggle with even the idea of exorcism. That it's exploitation of the mentally ill. A lot of times people have accused me of exploiting the mentally ill by trying to make the realities of demonic possession more visible and less taboo and destigmatize it by coming on television and radio shows like this to talk about this and let people know that this is a real thing and there is real help, although it's very limited and very hard to find. We're inundated, you know, we are absolutely inundated with cases. So I'm one of the few people that actually do this the right way. And I'm not saying that to boast, but, you know, we just went on a case yesterday. We started filming a new documentary. It's not associated with Ghost Adventures. This will be a separate production that really only features my work with Sister Mary Joan and Sister Maximilian in the Order of Exorcists for Atlanta. And, you know, the case that we did there, I'm not going to give any details about it because, we're still in production. But mm-hmm. The case that we did there, if that had come under the attention of the Roman Catholic Church, if they had been the ones that this family went to, they would not have received the help that they needed. And that's just a fact. And it's not because the Roman Catholic Church is incompetent, or it's not because they don't know how to do this work. They're just too limited within their paradigm to see all of the potential, all of the possibilities that might be at work in the situation. You can't, I mean, most likely, I don't know for sure, but most likely if the Roman Catholic Church had come into the case that we did last night, they would have dismissed them and said, there was nothing paranormal going on. Here's a blessing. Goodbye. They would have never validated what was really going on there. And they would have not known how to resolve it if they had validated it. And that's a real problem because there's too few people like myself who are doing the work the right way. Then you got the other side of the coin. Then you got people that are basically just amateur enthusiasts who get into paranormal investigation as a hobby and then all of a sudden think that now they're, you know, being called to start expelling demons from people's houses because, you know, you do this work long enough, people are going to start asking for that kind of help. You know, most people do not want a haunting. Most people do not want a demonic attachment in their lives. And so if somebody comes out to investigate, if a paranormal investigation group, which is like this amateur group, comes out and comes to their house, they will probably inevitably at some point in their work be asked, can you get rid of this thing? And sometimes people think, sure, I can take on this because you know, they've been doing the paranormal and they see this as the next natural step. That's very dangerous because there is an extensive amount of training that's required to do this correctly. And so the problem is you got both sides of the spectrum and neither one is really a very helpful. You got those that are trained well in the Roman Catholic Church, but they're only seeing a fraction of the problem and only working with a fraction of the problem. So they're all not helpful for the majority. And then you got the other side where it's just a bunch of people that are more than willing to help, but they don't really know what they're doing and can make it much worse. Most of the time, in fact, I would say Sister Mary Joan could probably validate this for me better than I can because she's the one that really deals with the clients directly before I get involved. But I can tell you that most of the time when a person comes to us after having had another group come in, they always tell us that after the group left, it got so much worse.
Right.
And that's a real problem. So we even have a policy now where we'll take – if we take your case, you have to work exclusively with us. If you bring in another team at some point, we're done. We close your case. And that's because I don't have time. I've got too many cases. I don't have time to fix problems from other people that come in who don't know what they're doing. I don't have time for that. And we make it very clear with the client. So, you know, you want to work with us, we'll work with you, but you only work with us because I can't keep coming back here and fixing everything that goes wrong after the fact. So, you know, that's just some of the things that we deal with and some of the things that we see. It's just part of the work, the part that people don't get to see on television, you know, because typically they only show you the best parts on TV.
Right, because so if they showed you everything that happened, then nobody would watch that show.
Exactly, because it's actually quite mundane most of the time.
It is. It really is.
Yeah.
How long are you on location before you actually go? And I used to be a makeup artist, but, you know, how long is it that you're on location, depending on how severe and everything? What's the average length of being on location before they only shoot, what, an hour, 45 minutes of actually filming for TV and everything?
Well, with Ghost Adventures, there's several stages to it. So I'm only brought in for the final stage. So, you know, what you don't see is, I mean, obviously they have a B-roll that comes in and takes, you know, additional shots for some of the more theatrical aspects of the show. You know, sort of like the reenactments and things like that. They have an entire separate production team that does that and puts that part together. So that's one stage of this that I'm not involved in. And then there's another stage where the Ghost Adventures crew makes contact with the family that are going to be featured in the episode. And, you know, they do a lot of preliminary stuff. They do a lot of the background. They do a lot of the preliminary investigating. And I'm not involved in that either. I'm brought in after the Ghost Adventures crew determines that this seems like it's a demonic case and this family wants help, and then they come to me. And usually the family, you know, a lot of times the family actually requests me personally. So they like ask that, can you bring in that exorcist that you've had on the TV before? And so at that point I come in, and that's usually typically the last day of shooting, I think. Sometimes maybe B-roll has to do with something, or maybe, you know, there's other things that the GAC needs to complete the episode. But I come in, and, you know, we're usually there for about 5 to 6 hours. And out of that 5 to 6 hours, the cameras are on pretty much the entire time. And, you know, what is an episode's like 42 minutes, 43 minutes after commercials. So out of 5 or 6 hours of footage, you're only getting to see the best 43 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a lot.
And that's very typical. Like last night, we did a case, like I said, for the documentary. And we started shooting at 8. We started shooting at about 6 o'clock. And we stopped shooting around midnight, or maybe a little bit past midnight, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, that might be no more than about 10 or 15 minutes of this documentary.
And you're completely usually exhausted after those anyway.
Oh, yeah. I mean, particularly
that's
when we're actually doing – It is. When we're doing the full thing, like when I do a GAC, you know, episode, it's not so bad because they do a lot of the initial legwork for me. I don't have to do the investigation. I don't typically have to do the validation part. You know, I sometimes have to get more information from the client and really confirm the GAC's suspicions. But overall, you know, they know what to look for. They've been doing this a long time, so I can typically trust what they tell me without having to question it or go back and check their work. You know, we're all professionals here, and we work, you know, collaboratively and efficiently that way. But for this documentary, I have to do it all. So it's the entire step of the process. I'm not shooting, of course, and I have, you know, the producers are doing all of the actual production aspect of it. But as far as the work itself, that's it's happening as it's happening. The cameras are just on watching me. They're like flies on the wall for the most part.
Wow.
I know what typically I had ever done an investigation, and like you were saying, people don't realize how much work goes into just a little 45-minute program. But if you have, like, a DVR system set up, you've got four cameras, and you've got recordings that are going and things like that. So if you did that for 8 hours, each piece of equipment, you've got 8 hours of evidence and stuff to review, and you tend to go back over that, so it takes a little bit longer, especially if you think you've caught some type of piece of evidence. People just do not understand how much time's put into these.
Oh, it's an insane amount of time, because you're right. I mean, let's say you bring in four cameras and five voice recorders, you know, and you're playing those for a 5 or 6 hour investigation. I mean, now you're having five or six times each one of those devices, and you got to go through painstakingly each one of those minutes listening for that EVP or looking for that particular anomaly. I mean, sometimes you can catch it in real time, but not often. So a lot of times, some of the best evidence that we've ever captured was always after the fact. We didn't see it happen when we were there.
Yes. And
wow.
You can hear disembodied voices, you know, with your own ear, and the recorder doesn't pick it up. But then there's things that the recorder picks up that you don't hear while you're there. And sometimes that just drives me nuts, because I would be listening and I would hear an answer to my question. And I thought, man, if I could have heard that, then I could have carried on that conversation and might maybe gotten some better information. But
yeah,
it gets a little frustrating sometimes.
Oh, it is. It's very, that part of it's very frustrating. I don't really actually have the patience to do it. But Sister Mary Joan actually enjoys going through the footage. So I'm very fortunate for that, because I just don't possess the patience to do it.
And you're so honest with that, and that makes me happy.
Yeah. You gotta be. It's all about authenticity. If I'm not, you know, if I'm nothing, if I'm not authentic, then I'm nothing. That's how I look at life.
That's like when somebody tries.
Facebook page that you are on one of the worst cases ever, and it's going to be on February 27th. It's actually going to be very challenging. Are you still working on it, or are you done with that?
No, we've been done with that case last year. It we shot it last year. You know, it will, I think it's going to be a very shocking episode for people. It's not something that I think they've ever really seen before. You know, I can't say too much about it, because I don't want to give any spoilers away. But this Thursday, I believe 9 o'clock Eastern time, it will air the season premiere for Ghost Adventures. And it's called Horror in Biggs. And it's truly the worst case I've ever had to work for the GAC. It's the most severe one I've ever been brought into. So that was a really good example of how bad it can get. I've seen worse, but this was a bad one. So I'm really Looking forward to seeing how they present the episode. And it's interesting because I was called in as an afterthought in this one. And really just because the family wanted some help. And when I got there, you know, it was a lot more extreme than we were anticipating. So I think the audience will find it fascinating.
What was it compared to the Demon House?
Well, the Demon House is a different thing because, you know, there was a different matters going on there. I wasn't involved with any of it. That was before I was involved with Ghost Adventures. So I don't know. I mean, I have to have been involved to know for sure how it compares to the two cases. But, you know, as far as a location in a family that is definitely in the midst of a dangerous paranormal situation, Biggs was pretty bad. This case on Thursday that you're going to see, it's pretty bad.
Wow. So what's your take on this? You watch those kind of things. Brian, is there a possibility that you can pick those things on, by watching them? I don't know. That's a silly question, but I have to ask that question. Can that affect you so bad that you're taking on any attachments just by watching it?
It's a question that we get quite often, and I'm glad you asked it because it's always worth repeating because not everyone's always heard my answer on it. But no, you can't. You know, there's a certain metaphysical necessity in these things to physical contact. There needs to be an exchange of energy in a physical way for that to actually occur physically. So if a person feels that they, you know, picked up something from a paranormal show, it's only because their fear has made them weak and vulnerable to something that's actually local to them. So it's not like they watch the show about demons and the demons coming through the TV screen and getting them when they're sleeping. That's not how it works. But if they watch the show on demons and they got really terrified about it and now they're afraid that a demon's going to attack them, that fear can invite that very thing into your life. And if you happen to be in close proximity to a demonic entity, then they might use that fear as a doorway into your life. And so that's the real danger, is being afraid of it. You know, but as long as you don't allow that, you know, succumb to that fear, don't allow that fear to get irrational, then, you know, you cannot get anything from a television show or a movie. The only exception to this, okay, and there is one exception, and that is when movies use sigils. And there is a movie called, I believe it was Hereditary, and they used an actual sigil from an ancient grimoire, or I think not an ancient one, but one from the Middle Ages, a grimoire that I don't even remember which demon it was. Maybe somebody in the audience remembers, but it was an actual sigil from that particular demon. And I can tell you, when I went to go see that movie in the theaters, it was a normal crowd of people, you know, just having fun, wanting to go see a horror movie. And, you know, it was very interesting. I like horror movies, so I had heard this would be a good one, and it looked like a good one. And then that sigil came up on screen because it's part of the movie, and I guess the writers wanted authenticity, so they put the real one in there. And at that time, as soon as that happened, people started acting really strange. And we had two people in front of us who were very quiet and not causing any problems. And then suddenly the girl in front of me started putting her feet up on the chair in front of her. And that's not a terribly uncommon thing to see. It's a bit disrespectful. You know, I don't think that people should be doing that. You should have more class than that when you go see a movie. But, you know, this is what they were doing. And so I didn't think anything of it until the sigil came back on. And then the girl that was sitting in the seat that the one in front of me was putting her feet up on turned around to that girl and said, will you take your feet down? They stink. And I mean, it was like at the she was screaming this at the top of her lungs. So I found it a little bit humorous, actually. It was a bit distracting from the movie, but it was kind of funny. And she wouldn't take them down. And so the woman that was in the seat turned around and started screaming bloody murder at her. And then they just left out. And then other people in the audience started saying, "Put your feet down, put your feet down," and she wouldn't. And so I want to say Sister Maximilian looked at the woman and said, "Just put your foot, just put your feet down. You're disturbing the rest of the audience." And she turned around, and I kid you not, her eyes were pure black. There were no whites to her eyes, which is, you know, definitely a sign that we have seen in exorcism ministry as a genuine possession. So I'm not saying that the demon was conjured by the movie and went into that girl, but what I am saying is that a lot of people are unsuspectingly carrying around a demonic attachment that can be activated by something like a sigil. And that's the danger. So that's the only danger. So, no, hearing the name of a demon on a television show is not going to be dangerous. Seeing paranormal shows are not going to be dangerous. Seeing exorcisms performed on TV is not going to be dangerous. If it were, I wouldn't be doing them. But what is dangerous is when television shows show a sigil, because a sigil is an actual symbolic representation of that thing. It represents the actual presence of the entity. And so any medium that produces that sigil becomes the very essence of the thing itself. So if you put that sigil on a piece of paper, that's the demon. The demon is present there in that paper. If you put that sigil on a canvas with oil painting, now the canvas has become a sigil for an actual representation of that entity. So the same would be true if you put it on a television screen. The same would be true if you put it on a movie screen, because it's an actual representation of the sigil itself. That's the only dangerous thing that you would have to worry about when watching paranormal or horror films or something like that.
So you're safe now, Sherry. You can watch horror movies now.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, as long as they don't have the sigil, just be careful of that Hereditary, because I'll tell you, if you have an attachment, that movie could activate it because it has those sigils in it.
And as we talked earlier when you were on live on air with us, you know, you can get attachments from any place. Is that correct, Brian?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, it's, again, using Judeo-Christian theology as a guide, you know, I think it's easy for people to forget that, you know, Satan is not like a competitor to God. He's not like an evil God and God's the good God. I mean, he's part of creation. He was created. He's a being. And as such, he's limited. So demons are not omniscient. They're not omnipresent. There are limitations. Now, they can do things that human beings cannot do, but that's just because of their non-corporeal qualities. But outside of that, the reality is that they're still creatures, and creatures have limitations, and all the creatures in creation are no match for God. There's no comparison, not even angels and demons. So that's one of the things that becomes a factor to consider, which also means because they can't be omnipresent, it means they're not everywhere. They can only be in certain places at certain times. They can't be in more than one place at more than one time. And so it really becomes a matter of being at the wrong place at the wrong time. So an attachment that one could pick up is a few things have to happen for that to occur. Number one, you have to be spiritually or emotionally or psychologically vulnerable for some reason. And a lot of people are, because a lot of people are not reinforcing their spiritual life. People are falling away from church. They don't see value in it. They are being taught by society to be secular, and we're just creating an entire civilization, entire race of people who are just completely spiritually inept. And so that's just that's a big factor. The other thing is that, you know, emotional or psychological weakness can also be enough of a vulnerability combined with a lack of spiritual grace to put someone at risk for an attachment. But that person who is weak still has to be in contact with a demon. And the chances of them coming in contact with one are not terribly great because there's only so many of them and they're not everywhere, but they could be anywhere. So that's the distinction. They're not everywhere, but they could be anywhere. You just don't know. And once they come, once you come on their radar, then they could start following you and watching you for a very long period of time to observe your weaknesses and figure out what it would take to compromise you. And so, you know, that's kind of the answer to that question.
Wow. That's pretty heavy duty, Mayor Maria. It could be anywhere.
Yeah.
That's right.
You just don't know.
Always.
You just don't
that's
know.
Right. Just always be aware and behave and go to church, you know, be a good person.
That's what we call the cultivation of grace. Okay, and that's what people get out of church. You know, a lot of my clients say, "Oh, well, I believe in God, I believe in Jesus, but I don't like going to church. I'm not a church going person." Okay, that's fine, but that doesn't change the fact that that's the way Jesus set it up. You know, so if you have a problem with that, don't blame me. You know, blame Jesus if you think you have the guts to do that, because he's the one that set up the church to work this way. Okay, so the church exists as an establishment for cultivating one's grace, because Christ knew what we were up against here, and he knew we would need help, and he knew that he wouldn't be here forever, not in at least the capacity of, you know, the Messiah. You know, that would be something that he lived his life, he taught for 3 years, and then he fulfilled the will of God through the sacrifice of the cross and the resurrection. But that, you know, after his ascension, he left the Holy Spirit for us to be able to be strengthened and to continue the work after the fact. And the problem is here that people think that they can just ignore that part of it. The sacraments are very important. The ability to pray with your community is essential to that grace. So if you're ostracizing yourself from the very thing that can protect you from this, then you are at risk. That's just the way it works. So I don't judge people. I mean, I'm like, well, you better get to church. You know, you better become a Christian. I never do that. But I do let them know this is it. This is what you're dealing with. If it's not for you, if church is not for you, that's fine. But know that you're going to be more at risk. It's kind of like a doctor who has a patient who you know, is developing the signs of smoking-related illnesses or drinking-related illnesses. And you're like, you need to stop, or, you know, it's going to result in cancer, or it's going to result in cirrhosis or something. You know, you're reaching a point where you can't drink anymore, you can't smoke anymore. But the client comes back and says, well, I'm still going to do it. Okay, that's fine, but here are the risks. You know, you're not going to live as long a life. You're not going to live as well a life. And there's a lot more diseases that could happen now because you've made these choices. So make your choices. You're free to do that. But just know your consequences too. And don't be calling on the exorcist every time something goes wrong, because we don't have time for that. If you call on us, make sure that you're willing to actually reform your life. Because I'd rather only spend time with people who are. I cannot spend time with the people who are not interested in doing that.
But that's what people want. They don't want to give up what they're doing with their life. They just want somebody to fix the problem and then them not make any kind of changes at all.
Yeah, they want Gandalf. They want Dumbledore. You know, they want somebody to come in, throw the magic wand, make it all go away, and let them go back to their ordinary lives. It just does not work. In fact, the exorcist is just a facilitator. All we do is come in, professionally assess, and then facilitate a solution. But ultimately, the true exorcist is Jesus Christ working with the cooperation of the client.
It seems like, I can remember when I was younger, back in the 70s. For some reason, and it might have been the early 80s, but then it seemed like TV shows got to where that they made fun of anyone that believed in God or went to church or was respectful. It just kind of seems like that had all been designed to crumble the religion.
Mm-hmm. It is. In fact, somebody asked me today on Twitter, didn't really ask me, was basically quoting Bible verses at me, telling me how to do my job. Obviously, somebody from that evangelical world where, you know, we don't believe in religion, we don't believe in, you know, it's we're Bible only, all that stuff. Was quoting scripture about how you just make people understand that Jesus is their Lord and Savior, and that's somehow going to remove any demons that they might have, which obviously is not true. It doesn't work like that. You know, it's a process of getting people back on track spiritually, and it takes a lot of different tools of the church to make that occur. But, you know, I was talking I engaged him for a while, and I was kind of explaining to him that, you know, it doesn't work like this. And, there's a lot of people who think that they have some kind of better or newer solution to demonic possession, at least for those who believe in demonic possession, and a lot of evangelical Christians do. But they think that just by quoting Bible verses or making people believe that Jesus is God or something is going to be all the exorcism that you need. And I had to come back and say, look, these methods, these newer methods, the demons are on to them. They know about them. You know why? Because they are the ones who created them. All schism is the work of demons. Anytime a church broke away from itself and Christians became divided in this denomination and that denomination to the point that we now have 33,000 different names of the Christian faith, because you got your Baptists and the Catholics and the Orthodox and the Episcopalians and the Presbyterians, and then all these independent ones. That's the work of the devil, right? The devil did that. The Holy Spirit binds together. The devil separates and tears apart. So any new method,
divide and conquer,
and it works. And any new methods that they think that they can come up with that are better than the ones that we use, which are the ancient formulas, are not going to work, because the demons are the ones who invented them. And so we stick to what works. We stick to the ancient methodology. And that is the only way to resolve these issues. And so getting back to your point, yes, there is almost, it's not even a conspiracy. It just is what it is. This is what the demonic does. Creates confusion, creates anger, creates this feeling that, you know, you don't need this. And then arrogance, because that's really basically what it is. When you tell somebody, I believe in Jesus, I believe in God, but I don't need the church, that's just arrogance. There's no other thing that's causing that. You just think you're better than the rest of us. You don't think you need it, when Christ already said you do. Again, you don't believe in Jesus then, because you're not following what he told you to do. You don't have the option to leave the church. He told you this is how it works. And, you know, Christians themselves are moving away from this. This is the work of the devil. So it's all orchestrated. It is one big giant demonic conspiracy to get us unprotected, to make us unsafe, and to make us easy prey. And people are all too willing to give themselves over to it.
It's easier.
It is, yeah. And you know what? There's enough people that don't come onto the radar that get away with it, so it looks like it's safe. You know, because they'll say, well, look at Jim over there. He's never gone to church. He doesn't even believe in God. He's doing just fine. Yeah, Jim might be doing just fine. He's not on the radar. Not to mention that, you know, he might not be all that great a prize for the demonic. So why would they go after somebody that's already kind of lost anyway? You know, and so obviously, we have to be careful with how we look at things. And it's very arrogant for our civilization to think that we know better than the ancients. You know, this was passed on to us for posterity for thousands of years. Judeo-Christian theology started 4,000 plus years ago. And then it was further sophisticated 2,000 years ago. And then was developed over the last 1,000 years, you know, 1,000 years. And now we're all of a sudden going to say, we know better. We know better than the trillions of people that made up the entire body of spiritual knowledge. We knew better than all of them for 4,000 years? Come on. What's more arrogant than saying something like that? But we don't want to. Just like you said, it's easier to just say, you know what, out of sight, out of mind. I can live my life my way, you know. It's just, you know, that's the struggle of the exorcist. I mean, I don't mean to make this preachy, but I mean, this is part of the reason why it's such a challenge to do this work and why people are like, oh, you don't help anybody, Bishop. When have you ever helped anybody? Well, it's not about what I do. Okay, I help everyone, and I give everyone the absolute best that I can give. But if they don't take it, it's not going to do a damn bit of good. It's just like a doctor. You know, you got a disease, here's your medication, but if you don't take your medication, you're not going to get better. You can't blame the doctor for that. That's your fault. He did what he needed to do. He fulfilled his duty. I fulfill my duty. I tell you, I get the process started, and then I tell you what you need to do. If you don't complete it, that's on you. And unfortunately, a large number choose to do it their own way.
Yeah, they'll do good for a little while, and then they kind of backslide.
That's exactly right. In fact, that's why the mission church that we had out here closed, because we established it. We thought, you know what, wouldn't it be great if there was a spiritual hospital where people could come, you know, our clients could come, get better. You know, we could see them there, we could treat them there, and then they would have a spiritual home that they would feel safe to come into. And you know what? People would come, they'd get their appointment, they'd get their exorcism or whatever else they needed, and then we'd never see them again. They just
right.
didn't give a damn. And that's how they ended up in that situation in the first place. You know, most demonic possessions are not because you've prostituted yourself. It's not because you're some great sinner. It's because you're apathetic. Apathy is the biggest weakness.
You know, the out of sight, out of mind thing, that also goes along with the everything, even the politics, because it's like if I can't see it, it's not bothering me. As long as I can live my life, this is what I'm going to do. The disrespect that people have for each other now compared to just 20 years ago is appalling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that, I think, is a largely amount of the product of social media, because what it did is it created an illusion of a safe space where you could start to spew whatever was on your mind publicly without feeling the consequences of it. Usually the nonverbal cues of human communication are enough of a deterrent to not go up to somebody and tell them that they're, you know, an asshole. It's the way you put it, okay? So, you know, if you did that in public, you might get punched in the face. You do that on social media, there's no consequence to it.
Right.
And
yeah,
so that's, I think, a
make
big,
somebody else mad and then log off.
Yeah, exactly. And then you can just walk away. You can block them. You know, you block them. You don't even have to see the consequences. You can say whatever you want. It doesn't work like that in actual life, in the terms of the, you know, physically interacting with people. It doesn't work like that. So that's, I think, the main reason why we're starting to see a lack of respect, because now that dynamic has gotten comfortable and it's bleeding into the rest of our cult, our civilization. And so now people are starting to feel more comfortable about, you know, going up to people and being disrespectful to them, to their face. Now we're starting to see that. But I really think, I mean, not that social media is a bad thing. I don't. I mean, it's allowed. Look at what I've been able to do with it. I mean, I've been able to build this ministry that's largely, almost exclusively through social media. No one would even know I was doing this if it weren't for social media. I'm not even sure Zach would have found my work and noticed it if it wasn't for me being on social media doing this work. So there's definitely a positive side, But there's also this negative side where people need to be mindful of their behavior, and they're not, because it's just too easy to do the wrong thing.
Yeah, it appalls me when people get rude like that or start criticizing instead of saying, hey, is it true? Or, you know, yeah, it's just, to me, it's not good manners. People, they get away, it's almost like they can get away with saying anything negative and just bashing people and not having any facts, and then get, you know, like you said, just get off and get, you know, shut the computer, and that's just the way it is, kind of thing. Yeah, it's no respect.
Yeah.
Flat-out rude.
It is. It's just the product of our time. But, you know,
wow.
I mean, the work goes on, you know, and I do the best that I can, but the work goes on.
That's why I quit putting out anything. I never did. I think I put one, two things out of something that I had captured on in a picture. And just the comments from it is just, you know, everybody wants to call everything fake. Everybody wants to argue with you about stuff. I'm not going to argue with you about something that I experienced or something that I captured. I'm just not going to do it. And it's just, it sucks the energy out of me just to even deal with that type of negativity. So I just don't even do that anymore.
Right. Right. And that's a wise thing to do. There's no reason. There's just no reason at all to feed into that or play into that. And what are you going to get out of it? No one's ever going to change their mind because somebody has an opinion.
Exactly. That's why we have politics.
Exactly. Yeah. And it is. I mean, that's exactly why politics doesn't go anywhere, because talking things out irrationally is never going to lead to a solution. It's only cooperation that works.
Right. And if we ever saw any kind of cooperation, I think everybody would be into shock, because all you ever see on the TV is how everybody's fighting with each other constantly. And people feed off that. That's why ratings go up so much. The arguments, the fist fights, the things like that they show. It just amazes me the difference between when I was growing up and what's on TV now, and it's just shocking.
Yeah. Yeah, it is shocking. And, I mean, yeah, that is all part of the demonic interference in our lives. The world's always been like this in some form of fashion. It's just, this is the in vogue thing for it to be for now. I mean, it used to be where, you know, in the Middle Ages, just going from one town to the next, you were taking your life into your hands. You know, it was very dangerous. You didn't have a caravan, people that could protect you. You could end up mugged and killed. We typically do not feel that way today. I mean, you know, I don't necessarily feel like I'm in any particular danger going from, you know, Acworth to Kennesaw. You know, here in Georgia. I mean, that would not be something I'd worry about, because it's safer. So back in those days, that was the major demonic interference. It was, let's make people exploit travelers who are vulnerable. Now the vulnerabilities are different. So the demonic's now focusing in on that. And so now it's about human interaction and communication and using our obsessions against us. So we're all obsessed with television. We're all obsessed with the internet. These become the focal points and becomes a playing field for the demonic.
Tell me about your paranormal paramedics group.
Yeah, in fact, it would be kind of fun to maybe have us all on this show one time where all of us can talk about it together. But, you know, I've been working with numerous producers for many years, people that have been very interested in the work that I do, who have wanted to make this a series. But for whatever reason, it's been difficult to get networks to pick it up. I don't know if it's the religious aspects. I don't know if it's the exorcism aspect. I know that some people seem to make me think that they were worried about, again, that getting the perception that, that the network was exploiting the mentally ill, because naturally this group of people were under the impression that demonic possession really isn't real. It's really just mentally ill people, and they didn't want their network associated with that type of exploitation. So, you know, part of it is that. And that might have been one of the bigger challenges to getting this show picked up. But I think another part of it is also just they're afraid it could get too churchy or too preachy or whatever. And I wanted to rest their minds about that, because the actual work itself is not very churchy at all. There's an aspect of it, you know, particularly if exorcism has to get involved. But most of the time, it's very much like piecing together a mystery, which would be an excellent platform for a new series. And so I wanted to think, how could we make this work in a way that is authentic, that helps people? Because that's the main reason I would be doing this. I'm not really doing this for personal gain. I mean, certainly it would be nice to get paid for what I do, because most of what I do is completely free. And I don't derive a salary from it. I have to have private businesses that bring in another income in order to survive, because I don't get paid to be a pastor. I don't get paid to be an exorcist. So it would be nice to get paid to do the work so I could be more devoted to this and not have to focus on other sources of income. So that's the only personal part of it for me. Maybe create some security for my family as well, since, again, I'm not working a real job, which means there's no retirement and there's none of the usual protections that one creates in life. That's the only selfish part of it. But the main drive to do this is to get people help, because we don't get the donations that we need to do this work. To go on one out-of-state investigation cost about $3,000. And we barely get $1,000 in donation a month. Sometimes it's like $600. It fluctuates. People just give us what they feel like. They don't want. They pledge, and then they retract the pledge. They pledge, they give for 3 months, and then we never hear from them again. So it's very hard to create a budget. And, you know, with all the people who know the work that I do, it's very discouraging to see how little actually comes in to support this ministry. Because I give so much of myself freely, and they give so little back. And so one way that I've seen as a resolution to this, since clearly people are not going to change, and we're not going to all of a sudden see everyone say, you know what, he's right, we should be helping, even if it's just $5 or $10 a month, is to get a show and then have, a network that has a successful paranormal show come on. And then in addition to that, have sponsors that pay for it so that we can go see clients and help them completely free of charge. And we're getting paid and they're getting help and the network's happy because they got a good show and the sponsors are happy because people are watching. It's a win-win-win-win for everybody. And so I came up with the idea, how about we do this in a completely new, entirely new way? Let's take some of the top people from Ghost Adventures that have been on. Let's take Patty Negri, who is a witch, okay, and is also a medium and a psychic. So that's a great dynamic to have in this work. It's a great asset. Let's bring her on. Let's bring Darren Evans on, who's this excellent historian, researcher. He's very much proficient in demonology. Let's combine them, who are from very two different walks of life, with Sister Mary Joan and myself, who are independent Catholics. So you have this strange dynamic, because no one's used to seeing a priest and a witch work together. And it would be a really exciting thing for people to see that, all Christians are not like the ones you think you know. All right? Those are the loudmouths that think that they can do all sorts of say all sorts of nasty things. But so I thought that would be a good basis for a show, but what could we turn it into? So the paramedic aspect of it would be we would come in. We would assess the problem, and we would get the family stable. and then from there, you know, give them a treatment plan that they can go and carry out for themselves. So we're like more like paramedics in the sense that we come in and fix the immediate emergency, and then they would have to get their long-term care somewhere locally because we'd be moving on to the next case. And so that's the basic premise of the show. And so, you know, right now we're pitching it to various producers and networks and hoping that people see the value in this. And if you do, let the networks know, because they care more about what you think as the audience than what they think we think. You know, we've
right.
got – they see us as – we've got something to sell. So, you know, we're just a salesman at that point. But the audience, they're the ones that really bring in the numbers. They're the ones that bring in the money for their sponsors. And so if the audience wants to see this, they need to let the networks know that this is what they want to see. But I can tell you it would be really exciting. And the cases that we go on – are true mysteries. It never is the same from week to week. It's always a different case, and it's never what you think it is. It's, you come in, you think you're going to be dealing with one thing, and it turns out to be something completely different. It would make excellent television. People would love to watch it, but at the same time, we'd be really helping people because we'd be there, and we would make sure that the people get the help that they need. And then it wouldn't just be a Catholic priest and a nun coming in to help. It would also have the added benefit of a witch, because there are certain things that they can do that better that a priest couldn't, you know. And then we'd have the demonologist aspect, somebody who could do real detailed investigating research to help give us a bigger picture as to what's going on. Someone that's had personal experiences in this from a more secular side of the equation. So it's really going to be – it's a great concept, and hopefully it will be picked up because I really think people would love to see this. There's nothing like it on TV. You know, a lot of paranormal shows out there right now are not all that good. There's only a handful of them that are really good.
They're not. They're really not. And it's, a lot of them are just more ghost stories than they are anything.
Yeah. Yeah,
there's
just
nobody
kind of
helping anyone.
Correct.
But this is
no,
what
and very few people. There's a few of them that do help, but very few. Ghost Adventures is one of the very few that even has that dynamic on their show.
Yeah, more of it. And that's what people are supposed to be in this for, is to help people that need it. And you just don't see that, and that just always makes me so upset. A family needs help. This, like one of the amateur teams that you're talking about, they go in and they just make it worse. And either they get scared and leave, or they just do their investigation and go, oh, well, yeah, you've got something here, but sorry, can't help you with it. Call somebody else.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
That's what
exactly
a lot
right.
of them do.
Yeah, and then they go and they get passed around. A lot of them go to – a lot of our clients – go into the Roman Catholic Church first and were declined. You know, getting help is hard to find. So, you know,
it
if you're
is.
Going to be in this work and you're going to have a show, and, you know, presumably a successful paranormal television show should bring in some good money, why not use some of that to help those clients that you're featuring on the show? You know what I mean?
Right.
That's how I see it. I mean, it really, like I said, it's a win-win-win-win. Everyone comes out a winner if we work together in that respect. So hopefully it will happen, you know, because it would be nice to be able to do more cases and to be able to help more people and be able to go around the country more frequently. You know, as it stands right now, with the money that we got coming into the church, you know, we can take an out-of-state case maybe once every 4 or 5 months. It's ridiculous. We've got hundreds. Actually, might even have thousands now of out-of-state cases. Can't get to all of them if I can only take one case every 5 months.
Right. People don't realize how much money it takes. I mean, it's and just the cases around that I have worked, you know, you drive 2 hours or 3 hours to get there. That's gas money. You have to eat if you stay overnight. And that's just the simple little stuff that I used to do, and that runs into $300-$400 easy, just for us.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, they think because we're a church or something, it should all be free. And, you know, it is. The exorcism and the investigation and the pastoral help, that is all free. But what's not free is that Delta Airlines doesn't let us, you know, fly for free.
No.
You know, Hilton doesn't let us stay at their hotel for free. You know, the local restaurant doesn't let us eat for free. You know, Alamo doesn't let us rent their car for free. That all costs a lot of money. And so, yes, we have to charge, you know, we don't charge, but we have to request donations for out-of-state cases. And if they can't pay, then we have to just wait until our benefactors give us enough money to do it. And like I said, with, you know, most people donating $5 or $10 when they feel like it, that could take a long time to go help that person. By then, they could be dead. I mean, you know, that is sometimes the ultimate result of demonic possession.
Have you ever heard of that? I mean, does that happen quite a bit that people don't, it's not in the media, that it does happen where they don't get the help or get the wrong kind of help from people or whatever, Brian, that something does happen tragically like that?
Yeah, I mean, it happens enough that it's a problem. I mean, I would honestly tell you that, suicidal ideation is always demonic. Always. You know, there's a psychological component to it. But if a person is able to reach the point where they can successfully commit suicide, I can tell you right now it was absolutely a demonic event that made that happen.
Okay.
And so, yeah, I mean, you're not going to have a possession where a person – you know, where the demon just comes out and kills them. That's not common. But you would definitely have a demonic possession where the person is so despondent from the effects of the demon influencing their life that they would prefer to die than deal with it. And so they end up killing themselves.
That makes sense. It really does.
Well, can you imagine what it's like? I mean, it's...
Mm-hmm.
When you have a demonic attachment, it feels as though the entire world doesn't matter anymore. It feels as if nothing matters, that nothing makes sense, that no matter what you do, you will fail. No matter how hard you try, it's for nothing. And it makes you very nihilistic. And the more you listen to these demonic experiences, the more suicidal you can become. And if you don't get help in time, then, you know, that's a real threat. That's a real possibility.
So with your expertise, you can decipher whether it is demonic or mental illness, correct?
I mean, I have a rudimentary clinical background. You know, my undergraduate degree is in psychology, and I did work in clinical facilities in the early years of my career. So I do have a lot of experience with mental illness. Most of my clients at that time were either schizophrenic or schizoaffective disorder or bipolar disorder. And so you know, I'm familiar with what to look for some of the more extreme types of disorders that could simulate or have at least the appearance of demonic possession. So that is very much an asset. Now, I would not be able to legally diagnose them, but I can tell the difference for sure between, you know, somebody that is mentally compromised in some way or is under the influence of a demon. And so my part of it really is more about trying to confirm whether or not there's a demonic activity, actual demonic activity going on. That's where most of my focus is. But, you know, I can tell the difference between a schizophrenic and a demonically possessed person.
And knowing you, Brian, you are an empath. You're a natural empath, so that really helps too. We have a caller online. Do you want me to take that? Are you open to having a call? Okay, let me put her on or him on. Hold on. Hey, welcome to Paranormal Horizons. You're live on air. Who am I speaking to?
Hi, my name is Nancy Hayes.
Hi, Nancy.
Hey, Nancy, how are you doing?
Pardon me?
Where are you calling from?
I'm in Southern Oregon.
Okay. What can we help you with?
I just have a question for the bishop. I have a home that has had nothing but sadness and sorrow and bad luck, and I rented it out, and everybody that's lived in there has had something happen to them. So now I'm not renting it anymore, and I just wonder, when do you know to call in someone, you know, to look at the paranormal side of things?
I mean, that's a good question, and honestly, it's not always so clear, because there are a lot of things that could contribute to there being a genuine paranormal disturbance going on. So one of the things that you are looking for would be, are there actual physical disturbances that you can detect in the environment? Are things moving around when they shouldn't be? Are you hearing strange noises when you're in there by yourself? Are there anything that seems abnormal, or is there a sense or a feeling of sickness when you enter into the room? Is there a smell of rotting flesh or sulfur or some kind of repulsive odor that is unexplainable? You know, you go around, the place is perfectly clean, but it still smells like a trash dump. There's all sorts of possibilities that when you combine them and say, now there are people that have rented the place and, you know, it's not working out and people feel uneasy or unhappy there, that's when, you know, you might want to give a call and see if somebody can come out and do a cleansing. And there's numerous people that you could call for this. I mean, obviously, a priest would be a good one, but unfortunately, most Roman Catholic priests will not come and do a blessing if you're not part of their parish. So typically, they reserve that for only their own parishioners. And I've heard that some of their own parishioners don't even get that privilege anymore. They've called and asked, and their pastor said, we don't do that anymore. Which is very unfortunate, because that's kind of an obligation of the office. But
yeah, it is.
It is. It really is. So that can be a challenge. So you might want to try looking for an independent Catholic like myself, because we do tend to do those things for anybody who needs them. We don't necessarily restrict it to just our own people.
That's
one possibility.
To you.
yeah, absolutely. Another possibility is to look and find an authentic shaman. And that can be hard, because there's a lot of people that claim to be who are not authentically initiated into any particular shamanic tradition. And a lot of people try to self-initiate or do things like that. And, you know, the authenticity in that area is very far and few between. So it can sometimes be risky, because, yeah, they can definitely quiet down an active location or cleanse it out from something that might be negative. But if they're not genuine, and they don't really know what they're doing, then that can actually make the matters a whole lot worse. The one thing you don't want to do is try to fix yourself.
That scares me.
Yeah. So one of the things you could do, okay, you know, I mean, under the guidance of the church, one of the things you could do is you could get yourself some holy water, and you could sprinkle it around and say the prayer of St. Michael while you do it.
Oh, good. Okay, I've got that on a card I carry in my wallet.
Oh, there you go. Well, then you're already halfway through the challenge here, and you could just sprinkle the holy water around. And if you can get yourself some exercise salt, I think we'll be offering that some blessing kits soon that will have the exercise salt included, and that's something that, you know, you could use if you wanted to. Just go to the church's website at esotericcatholic.org, and when they're available, they'll be up there. And you can just take a pinch of that salt and put it in the four corners of the house, or if there's a particular room that seems to be, more active, then you can put the salt in the four corners of that room and see if it helps. That's not going to hurt things. If you use sacramentals of the church, that doesn't ever make it dangerous. It might make it a little bit more active for a while, because it sort of agitates the energy. But if it after two or three weeks, it tends to calm it back down, and then it just goes away. So that's something that any lay person can do, as long as you have those tools available. Yeah.
At the moment, I'm having it environmentally checked, you know, the mold and the air conditioning and the everything, you know, the air quality. I'm trying to eliminate all the physical possibilities, but I have a feeling everything's going to come back as nominal, so I'm a little concerned. My daughter's moving out here, that's why.
Oh, okay. Well, that would be my first course of action. Yeah, that would be my first course of action. As I just get some holy water, some exercise salt if you can, and say that prayer of St. Michael, and just continuously bless the place every day, and see if
that for sure.
Yeah, and if you can get a priest, that would be really excellent, because if there is something malevolent in there, you know, an exorcism might be required. It's hard to say. Unfortunately, not every, you know, every independent priest is authorized or knowledgeable in doing them. But
scares me is everything you just quoted as your list of things that could be happening has happened. I mean, I've been doing laundry and bed shows.
Wow, we're breaking up.
Yeah, I can't hear her anymore.
Yeah,
I can't hear her. Well, stop that time. We have like 4 minutes to go. So, but yeah, I don't know. All of a sudden, we're just kind of breaking up, and it's getting worse and worse. But it's interesting how things happen.
Well, thank you, Nancy, for calling in. Sorry that got to where it was breaking up so bad.
Yeah, it was a good question, and hopefully what we've been able to do will help, because there's unfortunately not a whole lot of resources for getting help in this. Hopefully, you know, I mean, that's one of the challenges for me, and one of the frustrations of being so underfunded is that, you know, there's really no way to get good quality skilled individuals working this the way that I do when you can't pay them a salary, you can't support them, they can't support themselves, and we don't even have, you know, headquarters set up in the various cities where, you know, they would need to be stationed to be able to do this. So the problem is that nobody wants to help to support this kind of work. And so the only ones doing it are those that are doing it out of the goodness of their heart. And there's a lot, very few people that are willing or able to work for free.
Right. Well, I thought our show was scheduled for 2 hours, but apparently it was just for an hour and a half, and we only have 2 minutes left. Can you tell everybody where they can go and pledge donations?
Absolutely. If you do believe and want to support the work that we do, what I would suggest you do is go to esotericcatholic.org or nicolaiancatholic.org. And right there, as soon as you get to that page on the right-hand side, there is a donation button. You click on that. It'll take you to a page that tells you a little bit about the work that we do and why we need help. And then you click the donation, and you can really enter in any amount that you want. And then you can choose to click a box that says make this a monthly donation. That's what we really need, is monthly donations, because it's, you know, one-time donations are great, and we never turn any help away. But unfortunately, one-time donations do not allow us to create budgets to be able to do projections to help more people. So
right, you're correct.
I
did it. It's really easy. If I can do it, y'all can.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, $5 or $10, you will not miss it. It's really truly a cup of coffee once a month, or a couple cups of coffee at Starbucks once a month. You know, if you can't give that up, then, you know, you really need to reevaluate how you live your life.
Right.
I'm not going to
cause
judgment, but I mean, you know, $10 is not a lot of money anymore.
I do it, and you're right. I don't miss that $10 a month. And again, I want to thank you, and I apologize for us running out of time on you. We will have you back again as soon as your schedule allows it, as long as you will come back.
I will be more than happy to, and it would be really great if at some point we could schedule a Paranormal Paramedics episode where you can get to talk to Patty and Darren and Sister Mary Joan, and we can talk more about our work together and what we plan to do.
All right, wonderful. And again, I thank you. And thank everybody for tuning in next week on Paranormal Horizons. I don't know if we have a guest scheduled, but check our Facebook page and all the information will be there. And I hope everyone has a wonderful week.
Yay. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks. Good night.
Take care. Peace.